Carmine Gallo is the two-time Wall Street Journal best-selling author of the book Talk Like TED, and in that he's referring to the great TED Talks that can be viewed on YouTube and other outlets and so on. He's also a columnist for Forbes.com and Entrepreneur.com, and today we're going to delve into his new book, The Storyteller's Secret, From TED Speakers to Business Legends, Why Some Ideas Catch On and Others Don't. So, Carmen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
So, this whole idea of trying to convince somebody of your point of view, whether it's to sell a product or to get them to do something that you know is in their best interest, having facts on your side just isn't enough. You have to do storytelling. I guess it's part of our collective DNA, you know, the epical image of our ancestors sitting around a fire, electrified by a wonderful storyteller, is something we can all understand. Has storytelling changed after all of these many millennia?
The tools have changed. We use PowerPoint instead of painting pictures on cave walls.
That's true.
But it's exactly right what you said. It's in our DNA. So what was fascinating and fun for me to write A Storyteller's Secret is to get into the science and to speak to neuroscientists who have studied this, and anthropologists who say that storytelling goes back 400,000 years. When people were able to sit around a campfire and tell stories, That is the milestone in human development because it sparked our imagination. Well, I realized that we're doing the same thing today. Things haven't changed. Richard Branson, who I've interviewed a couple of times, gathers his team around a campfire at his home on Necker Island, and they specifically do so for the purpose of sharing stories. And in fact, he said, not too long ago, Richard Branson said that if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you'd better have a good idea and you'd better be a great storyteller.
Yeah. So I can imagine Richard Branson on one of his islands sitting around a campfire, but I have a feeling that campfire is something digital or different. Is it?
There's actually, he commissioned a local artist to create the most beautiful fire pit you've ever seen. So yeah, okay. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I knew it had to be something like that. What does the science say which proves our basic human response to storytelling?
Well, this is the most fascinating part. We now have more evidence in the last 10 years that story is the most effective component of persuasion. We've learned more in the last 10 years than we've ever known. Because we have MRI, we have lab tests, we have data now. So we're learning several things. They're doing research at Princeton University where they are finding that when two people tell each other a story, the brains of both the speaker and the listener are in sync. It's called neural coupling, which means that if I tell you a story, they can see the same regions of our brain having that same blood flow. They call it neural coupling. I call it having a brain sync. You know, I mean, we're just in sync with each other. Paul Zak on the other end of the coast in Orange County, California, or in Los Angeles, is studying oxytocin. And I've had a couple of conversations with Dr. Zak. So what he finds is that when you are watching a gripping or heart-wrenching story, that when they take a blood draw, there's a much higher level of the molecule oxytocin, which is the love molecule, that creates empathy between two people. And they are finding that a higher level of oxytocin is more likely to incite someone or persuade someone to give money to a charity. So in other words, when we hear stories, it's doing something to our brain. It is triggering a rush of chemicals, cortisol, dopamine, and oxytocin. So stories actually do work on our brain. And that's because, getting back to what we just talked about, Steve, we're hardwired for story. Mm-hmm. This is the way we process information.
Well, we live in an age which is increasingly being dominated by robots and automation. And I guess the question is storytelling a purely human endeavor? Can it be replicated automatically or autonomously through robots, or is that going to be the great differentiator?
Well, this is why I'm excited about the topic, because I started writing about storytelling just strictly from a business perspective, because venture capitalists, billionaires like Richard Branson, VCs, great leaders, they were all telling me the same thing. They were all telling me, Carmine, if you speak to entrepreneurs or small business owners or business professionals, please tell them that facts alone are not enough. Mm-hmm. They're not doing storytelling. They have to wrap their data in narrative and emotion and story. So this was, for me, a pure play business book. Till I started to realize, and I read a lot of material on this subject, that computers and automation are replacing almost every human task. And it's quite frightening because there are tasks which just a few years ago we didn't think would ever be automated, more creative tasks. So it is frightening and it's displacing jobs, but there is one skill that so far at least, and in the foreseeable future, robots cannot replicate, and that's the human power of emotion through story.
I see.
So to me, now it becomes an even bigger ultimate competitive advantage, not just in business, but in life.
Saying that the emotional aspect of the human condition is something that is maybe the fundamental differentiator between us and robots.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be your ultimate competitive advantage. So you remain relevant in the workplace.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long ago, I mean, just real quickly.
Sure.
I spoke to a young 25-year-old man who had some technical experience. He was looking for a new job. He had some technical experience, but not much. And so on paper, he didn't look that good compared to a lot of other candidates. But in his first job interview, he said he had read some of my work and really practiced communicating what that company's vision was and their products and all that. They hired him in 2 days. He doubled his salary.
Yeah.
And they told him specifically, they said, we have plenty of people who know the technical part, but not that many who can communicate it well.
My guest is Carmine Gallo. The book is The Storyteller's Secret, From TED Speakers to Business Legends, Why Some Ideas Catch On and Others Don't. And to find out more about Carmine and to hear this interview again, don't forget to join the conversation. And I say this very emotionally, join the conversation at onthemoneyradio.org. So we all know one archetypal typical story is the rags to riches storyline. What are some of the other archetypical stories that we're very, very familiar with?
Well, first of all, rags to riches, keep telling them. We are wired. Here's something else in this literature. We are wired to love rags to riches stories because we need to hear them. We need to find meaning in struggle. So if you have struggled or you have failed and learned something from it, by all means, continue to share those personal stories because they make a connection with people.
Mm-hmm.
But the other structure that I like is by stealing a page from Hollywood. All commercially successful movies have a three-part structure, and you can use this in your very next business pitch or presentation.
What are they?
Part one is the setup. So there has to be the backstory, the status quo. Here is the hero's world as it is. Part two is the conflict. That's where we get the villain. And part three is the resolution. Every movie, almost every commercially successful movie, has to follow the three parts. In a business pitch, Steve, it's very simple. So let's say you are advising someone or a new client or a prospect. Paint a picture of the world as it is for that particular company or client. Act two, there's a problem or a challenge. You know, they're about to hit an iceberg in Titanic. They may not even see the iceberg, but you're going to show them that conflict. Part three is the resolution, and that is how your business, your idea, your service is going to make their world a better place.
Yeah.
Three structures, you could do that in 1 minute. 1 minute story.
You know, the one story that comes to mind when you describe this is basically the story of Cinderella, which is, I understand is told in many cultures. The backstory, you know, the poor young girl, and the backstory about the evil sisters. And so there's your villains. And then, of course, you know, the rise to final fame and fortune and so on.
A screenwriter taught me that Cinderella and Rocky, those movies work because there is a very strong dramatic arc.
Yeah.
So they can't just be not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be really down in the dumps.
Yeah.
And then they have to be at a castle at the end. I mean, there has to be a big dramatic arc.
There's a great Kurt Vonnegut video, YouTube. It's on YouTube. He was lecturing, I don't know, must have been 34 more years ago on a blackboard. And he discusses just that, the exact arc of Cinderella. I'm going to send it to you. You're going to love it. What level of language in business or otherwise should you be using? Should you be speaking at a college level, at a high school level, or what's the best level of language to use?
Well, I hope we don't offend anybody on our radio station today. Sixth grade level.
Sixth grade.
Okay. And I do have a lot of proof for this. But let me add this caveat. When, and this is actually an important caveat, when you have a message that needs to be communicated to the widest possible group of people, it helps to speak in sixth grade language. Sixth grade language meaning a typical sixth grader can probably understand and read it, and that the words are short. The sentence structure is very simple. There isn't a lot of jargon. It's not very confusing, just very simply laid out. And I have a lot of evidence for this. Bill Gates, in his newsletter, every year Bill Gates sends out this beautiful newsletter that talks about philanthropy in the world and some of the challenges that he and Melinda Gates see. Take a look at the last newsletter. I took all of the content from it. I put it into a tool that actually measures text for grade appropriate levels, and it turned out to be about sixth grade. So what Bill Gates has done beautifully is he has learned to take complex information and reduce it to a very simple language. Yeah. We're seeing this a lot. Steve Jobs did this all the time. Elon Musk. I have a whole chapter on Elon Musk. I took an entire presentation of his that, again, meant for the masses, for the masses, not just two engineers, meant for the masses, and it's about sixth grade level. And he would say things like, this is real. Pollution is real. Yeah. Our air is dirty.
Yeah,
this is the answer. This is the solution. It is called the sun. Very simple language.
Right. Now, I just saw on YouTube him rolling out the battery for the home. And that's exactly the terminology he used. We have this big fireball in the sky that gives us unlimited energy, right? We can all see that image.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. Now, you interviewed, I think, 50 storytellers, and there was quite a range. And you mentioned Richard Branson, but you've also interviewed, or you write about, Howard Schwartz from Starbucks, but even Joel Osteen, the incredibly successful televangelist. What's different? What's the same about those very three vastly different characters and other characters that you've written about? And what's really the same?
Well, the first third of the book, and this is, again, I did not intend for this to happen, but the first third of the book talks about how you need to reframe the message or the story you tell yourself. You will never inspire others unless you're inspired yourself, unless you actually believe and have confidence that your story is worth being heard and shared. So Joel Osteen, this is not a religious book in any way, but Joel Osteen obviously is a very successful motivational speaker. For 17 years, he did not believe that he belonged on stage. And today he sells out Yankee Stadium. He sells out stadiums around the world. Can you imagine how nervous most people would be speaking to 50,000 people? And yet, 17 years ago, or for 17 years, he never saw himself doing that. And the first time he preached, Joel Osteen told me that he was absolutely paralyzed with fear. I mean, he was shaking at the lectern.
I know a lot of people can relate to that for sure.
Yeah.
Now, his father was a pastor.
It all starts with changing your internal thought structure. Speaking differently to yourself.
Yeah.
It all starts in your head.
Well, is it the Stuart Smiley thing, like from the old SNL, you know, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me? Or is it something a little bit more sophisticated than that?
It's not that much more sophisticated. You know, visualization. I mean, we know from great athletes, great winners, that they visualize
themselves. Yeah, they visualize, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you have to visualize. If you have a fear of public speaking, you absolutely have to go through the motions and visualize yourself as a strong speaker. Shonda Rhimes, the Grey's Anatomy producer, was paralyzed with fear of public speaking. And she wrote a book called The Year of Yes. You may have heard of it. The Year of Saying Yes, where she actually accepted opportunities that she never would have accepted before. Yeah. She had to say yes to everything. And she realized that she became more confident by doing those things which she originally feared. Now she embraces.
I hadn't heard that, but I actually have gone through my own personal experience with a period of saying yes to things I had formerly said no to. So that's quite interesting for me. We have interviewed Barbara Corcoran, which is one of the people in the book, but you mentioned an individual by the name of Brian Stevenson, not a household name by any imagination. He's a TED speaker. Tell us quickly about him.
Brian Stevenson is a human rights attorney. He earned the longest standing ovation of any TED speaker in TED's 30-year history. So look him up, Brian Stevenson. He is a very successful attorney who wins cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. So he knows how to persuade. If you watch a 15-minute presentation by Stevenson, there's three personal stories. So what he does is he tells a personal story, then he delivers the data that he intends to communicate to his audience. Personal story, data, personal story, data. So there's three stories. The data reinforce the story, but the data doesn't come first. Whereas in most business presentations, what do we all do? It's all just a data dump, but there's no emotion. Mm-hmm. Brian Stevenson knows, and he has told me, that narrative is hugely important in persuasion.
Personal story, data, personal story. People relate to who you are and the struggles you've dealt with in your life, and that's the way to kind of to start setting up the image that you're trying to portray.
Or in business or business pitch, it could be a case study. Mm-hmm. I know you're an investment advisor. It can be, obviously, you have a million case studies of people who did something or who did not take a plan of action and may have suffered because of that. Mm-hmm. So those are equally as powerful as personal stories.
Very interesting. The book is The Storyteller's Secret, From TED Speakers to Business Legends, Why Some Ideas Catch On and Others Don't. My guest is Carmine Gallo, the author. And to find out more about Carmine and to hear this interview again and get the transcripts for this interview as well, join the conversation at stevepomerantz.com. Carmine, it was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.